for the whole game, really, but especially the last three quarters. You just had one team, Dallas, who played with a much higher level of intensity and a much higher level of offensive energy. I mean, it was just too much for us. We could not stand up to their energy and intensity. We didn't bring that to the game, and we got dominated. No resistance whatsoever. Yeah, the ball was in the paint that second quarter all the time. We couldn't contain any of their guard. We didn't play with good offensive energy either. Their defensive pressure flattened us out. To me, it was as simple as one team played a lot harder on the defensive end and with a lot more quickness and energy on the offensive end, and that told the whole story in the game.
I'm very curious about how it's going to function. You know, I think it could be something good. There's a lot of kids that fall that are in between, like being NBA talent, you know, NBA ready talent coming out of college or high school, and at the same time, not being quite good enough. So there's obviously the G League, and, you know, there's that option. There's overseas. There's that option, too. I'm all for creating opportunities for kids to continue playing basketball. I think it could be a good thing depending on how it's run. So I am very curious to see how it all turns out.
Between college, where these guys can go play, and or the G League where they can play, I don't know if there'll be a place for this. As I said earlier, whether you think it's a good idea or not, I just don't think LeVar Ball can get out of his way enough to be able to oversee this. You would really need some structure and some planning for this thing, and I just think LeVar likes to control too many things himself, but when you start talking about something this intricate, I just don't think that with his personality that he would be able to pull it off.
Here's a drive deep to right center field. Carry, baby, carry! Goal! What a home run! Yonder Alonso! And the Mariners have a 2-1 lead here at Yankee Stadium.
That one's hit to right. And that one's hit deep. And that baby's gone. Alonso has done it again. That one is ripped to right field. Aducci's back, and it is gone! And the season Alonso.
On the same day that Carlos Santana tried on his new Phillies uniform, Indians reached a 2-year contract agreement with free agent first baseman Yonder Alonso. The pact is worth $16 million guaranteed and includes an $8 million vesting option for a third season. Last year, between stints with the A's and Mariners, Alonso had a career year. He belted 28 home runs after never having hit more than 9 in a single season. He had an 866 OPS, which was powered by an incredible first half. Much of Alonso's success was due to a heightened fly ball rate, which jumped nearly 10% in 2017 when compared to the rest of his career. The Indians will be hoping that that is a sign of more things to come rather than a fluke, and progressive field in Cleveland often plays well for left-handed hitters.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. 10 minutes after 3 as we get you rolling on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. What's going on? Thanks for joining us on a Thursday afternoon for a little sports talk fun. Coming up in about, 20 minutes? 25 minutes? Yeah, we'll give it a 25. Yeah, we'll give it a 25. We're going to talk to Todd Kowalczyk, UT Basketball, Rockets Hoops, always a hot topic of conversation around the Glass City. Coming up at 4:10. We get into Major League Baseball. Zach Meisel from The Athletic will be joining us to talk about some of the winter moves, particularly with the Indians. Zach used to be an Indians writer, excuse me, working out of Cleveland in the great northeast of the state of Ohio. He is now with The Athletic, but he's got some thoughts on what you just heard there. Yonder Alonso is now a Cleveland Indian, a 2-year, $16 million deal to play first base after the Indians, of course, lost Carlos Santana for $20 million a year to the Philadelphia Phillies. 28 home runs last year between the A's and the Mariners, first-time All-Star, and we'll see whether or not that is something he can replicate as an Indian. So a little baseball talk coming up in the middle of winter here. That'll be at about 4:10. But for now, I really want to address the first part of what you heard in that montage. And I want to say some things about LeVar Ball. And quite frankly, I have been very hard on LeVar Ball. I've been one of the most fierce critics probably in talk radio. Not that it matters to him. He doesn't know me. And that's fine. And there are a lot of people in high-profile national positions who have been critical of him. And he ignores them, too. So he'll ignore me virtually every step of the way because he has no reason not to. He doesn't know me. But I'm going to say it. For the first time since the name Ball, as it pertains to LeVar, Lonzo, LaMelo, or LiAngelo, burst onto the national scene, I'm going to say something nice. Actually, I have said, it's not true. I've said some nice things about LeVar as a, even though I've disagreed with some of his decisions about his kids' careers, particularly the younger ones, pulling them out of high school and pulling them out of college and all this other stuff, trying to manufacture publicity for his oldest son, for Lonzo, forcing his way into Los Angeles, the only place he said he would play, the only team he would work out for, all that stuff. And, of course, all of the hype, he's better than Curry. And my guys, my son is better than Curry right now, made him a target. All of those things are bad. But I have said nice things about the fact that he is an involved, caring father. He is doing, even though I may disagree with what's right or best for those three young men, he is doing what he thinks truly is right and best for them and for the family. And quite frankly, in a time in 2017 where far too many black children grow up without fathers, in fact, 75% of them, fully three quarters of young black babies are born to single mothers in 2017 America. Dads are not around. So the fact that LeVar is around and doing all the work he can for them, I have given him great compliments on. But as it pertains to decision making and publicity and all the other stuff, I have not had too many nice things to say about LeVar Ball. But that's going to change because I believe his idea here is something that is long overdue. It is the solution to the problem that so many people have had about one-and-dones. We all know that one-and-dones at the college basketball level have kind of made it's made a joke out of the entire higher education system. You know, we're going to force you to go to take classes to get credit hours toward a degree that you will never, ever reach. We're going to make you pretend to be a student for a year. That's all we're going to acquire. 1 year of pretending to be a student. Because then you'll be eligible for the NBA draft, and the NBA will not allow you to come in until a year after your high school career ends, until you're 19. So we're going to make you pretend to be a student, which makes a mockery of your own career. It makes a mockery of the higher educational process. And sadly, it makes a mockery out of college recruiting and college basketball. Let me ask you this. When a guy plays 1 year at a college and then shoots to the NBA, can he make a claim to that college? Does that college get to say that's a Tar Heel, that's a Wildcat, that's a Blue Devil, that's a product of our great college basketball system? And the answer is, when there's a one and done, the answer is no, in my opinion. I mean, I look back, Michael Jordan, from North Carolina, 6'6". It's from North Carolina because he played multiple years at North Carolina. He was a product of the Dean Smith system. Patrick Ewing from Georgetown. He played 4 years at Georgetown. And I'm going back to old days. You know, even Isaiah Thomas, who left early from Indiana, at least played a couple for Bobby Knight and learned the game from the general. Mark Aguirre is DePaul basketball. And I'm picking some people you know from, you know, from the Pistons and so on. He is and was. When you just do a pass-through, stop at a college campus, pretend to be a student, go to the classes that you have to just for attendance sake, you don't even really have to pass. You have to pass the first quarter unless you're on semesters, and then it's, you know, you got to just squeak by with a D average because it doesn't matter to you. You're never going to have a transcript that you look at in your life because you're never going to have to take that transcript, calculate your GPA, write it onto the front page of a resume, and hand it to somebody as you sit down for a job interview. When you are a five-star basketball recruit to a powerhouse, you're going to the NBA, you pretty much don't need resumes and cover letters. Your GPA doesn't matter. It makes a mockery of the whole process. What I'm talking about from a basketball standpoint, though, is, you know, just to throw it out there, you know, for example, Karl Anthony Towns played a year at Kentucky. Does Kentucky get to brag about that's a Kentucky product? You know, it used to be something, you know, which programs turn out the best pros. which programs come, you know, North Carolina turned out James Worthy and Sam Perkins and Michael Jordan and, you know, Brad Daugherty and you can go on down the line. Duke, of course, you know, a lot of their players don't turn out to be great pros. They were better college players than pros, but they are products of the Duke system. You know, Jim Boeheim's guys at Syracuse and some of the basketball factories. UCLA, of course, turning out some of the greats of all time. Bill Walton and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and you just go on down. And it meant something to say he's a UCLA Bruin. He's a Kentucky Wildcat. He's an Indiana Hoosier. Can you claim that when somebody was only there for a year? He's not a product of yours. You didn't coach him up to be the second pick in the draft. He was going to be the second pick of the draft out of high school. He was forced to come to you because of the rules. So the one-and-done system, to me, has been played. It is old. It is busted. I don't know if it would be better to go one direction or the other. Well, I do, actually. I was about to say, I don't know if the answer would be going from one direction or the other. Let's get rid of the one-and-done rule and let kids come right out of high school again and just let the teams, buyer beware. You know, good luck. If you draft somebody that you think has a high ceiling but isn't ready yet and you can get him to that level without destroying his confidence, draft him. If you don't think you can, then don't draft him. I don't like it, but maybe it's better than what we have now. The other direction, of course, would be let's institute something like the NFL has. You cannot come into the NFL, and it's a different animal. College football is a different animal than college basketball. Pro football is a different animal than pro basketball, clearly. You can't go to the NFL as an 18-year-old high school graduate. Your body is not, I don't care how much you lift, I don't care how much you train, I don't care how much you work, your body physically, maturity-wise, is not ready to play against grown men, grown NFL linebackers. And that's one of the reasons why the NFL has the rule that they do. Nobody can come into our league until 3 years after their graduating class in high school. So if you want to go play college for those 3 years, fine and dandy. Redshirt 1 year, play two, that's fine too. But you can't come in until you are at least 3 years from your graduating class, and that means about 21 years old. Maybe that's the answer for the NBA. Maybe that solves the one-and-done problem, because now when Todd Kowalczyk, just to throw it out there, since we'll stay local, recruits a guy, he knows he's going to have him for at least 3 years, or bare minimum two. And on a bigger scale, of course, you know, Tom Izzo knows that. Up at East Lansing, he's not just going to get a guy and lose him after a year. So the recruiting means something. It sets you up for success over the next two or three seasons that you have these guys. Now it's not just pretending to be a student. You have to be a student for two or three years. And who knows? Maybe that's the best thing for the kid, because you go there for 3 years, you have to take classes. Now you're just 1 year away from a degree, even if you don't stay now. But you go back, you only have a year's classes to take, and you get the degree that might serve you well later in life if you don't go on to fame and fortune and NBA riches. Maybe that's the answer. Or maybe LeVar Ball has the answer. And that was a long, circuitous route to get where I am here. But I think it's important. There has often been a question, why can't high school stars who can't get into the NBA yet, or who are not quite ready for the NBA yet but don't want to pretend to be students, they don't want to have to go to small group communication class, TV, music appreciation, and other courses to pretend they're students for a year, taking time away from their training for the game that they love and into the career that they're going to have at the professional level? What is out there for them? And this league that LeVar Ball is proposing here makes some sense. Now, the question is, can it make some money? That's another story. Can it make some money? I don't know. Can the players make some money? Can LeVar Ball make some money? Can the teams in this league make enough money to stay operational? Those are all very big questions, because we're talking about it takes, you know, probably tens of millions of dollars, and I'm no big business tycoon, so I can't necessarily say it'll take hundreds of millions, but probably somewhere into that range too, depending on how many teams are in this league and how many elite basketball players after high school would want to play for it before they can go to the NBA. But LeVar Ball's Junior Basketball Association has some merit. Now, you could argue that this is not going to work because LeVar Ball is not fully invested in it. What he is invested in is, again, what is he always invested in? Growing the brand. Establishing and spreading word about BBB, the Big Baller Brand, 3B. The logo for this junior league that has already been released, the new Junior Basketball Association they're calling, features not Jerry West, but whom? Cush, you probably know, don't you? You don't?
I'm looking at the logo
it's
right
Lonzo
now.
Lonzo Ball.
Okay. Now that you say it, I can see it. I can see that a little bit. Okay, because I'm
logo,
looking at the logo
the
now.
The silhouetted logo is Lonzo Ball. Why wouldn't it be? We're going to make the logo for the Junior Basketball League a guy who never played in the Junior right. Basketball League. He's in the NBA before this thing was created. So you could argue that LeVar isn't really interested in growing this thing, and this is all lip service, and this is all talk. It's just another way to keep Big Baller Brand and LeVar Ball's name on the tips of the tongues of the average buying, remember, the American buying public. So you could argue that there is no merit to it. But for me, if LeVar Ball is serious about this, I think it's got some legitimate merit. From ESPN, he said yesterday to LeVar Ball that he's launching this basketball league for nationally ranked players who have graduated high school but don't want to go to college and pretend. His Junior Basketball Association, which would be fully funded by Big Baller Brand, and I'm not sure about that because I don't know if Big Baller Brand has made enough money in shoe sales yet or T-shirt sales or whatever to do
right.
that, but it's what he says, would pay the lowest-ranked player a salary of about $3,000 a month and the best player, according to national rankings, about $10,000 a month. So obviously for the quote-unquote season, the Junior Basketball Association season, which my guess would probably be about 5 or 6 months long, you know, it's after, the high school season ends, but it's before the NBA season, the next NBA season for which they would be eligible to play. They're not eligible until after a year. They'll probably play 5 months. They're not going to make them play 6 or 7 months. So that would be around $70,000 is what a player would make while playing for the junior league instead of going to college and playing for free while pretending to have to go to classes and pretending to care about being a student. A lower-ranked player would only make, maybe $18,000. But again, it would be enough to cover his expenses probably and give him an opportunity to be competitive with other elite players, not just going and beating up on nobodies in an NBA D-League type setting, but not being sacrificed to the, to the vultures in the NBA. LeVar says he would need about 80 players to fill out 10 teams that would play at NBA arenas in 4 cities, Los Angeles, Dallas, Brooklyn, and Atlanta. Now, again, not being a business tycoon, I'm not going to be able to truly critique that model, but I do think from an expense standpoint, why spread it from across 3,000 miles if you're only going to have 4 arenas being played in? Why not centralize that? Why not centralize it in New York or in California? Why have them in New York? And I guess it's, again, a question of are we really trying to serve the purpose here or to expand the Big Baller Brand in all of the biggest markets? You would think that if there's only going to be 4 arenas that they're going to play in, that they might kind of keep them a little bit closer together. Ball told ESPN, getting these players is going to be easy. This is giving guys a chance to get a jump start on the career, to be seen by pro scouts, and we're going to pay them because someone has to pay these kids. The rules of the league would follow the NBA rules instead of the college rules. Instead of 2 20-minute halves, 12-minute quarters, and an NBA-length three-point line as opposed to the college three-point line, which is indeed an adjustment for a lot of people, including whom, Jim Cushlin?
Lonzo.
Lonzo Ball, who shot the ball pretty well from three in college, but has a very, very low percentage in
right.
the NBA.
I agree with those completely. If this is part of the point, then you have to have the game, the court, et cetera, be NBA rules, not college. That I agree with wholeheartedly.
LeVar said he was partly motivated by the comments made earlier in the month by the NCAA president, Mark Emmert, who was asked at a conference whether Ball was good or bad for the college game. Is this something about something, is this about someone being a part of a university and playing basketball or any other sport with that school's jersey on, representing an institution, or is it about preparing me for my career, my professional career as a ball player? Emmert responded just a few days after Ball's son, LiAngelo, left UCLA to turn pro before even playing for the school. He said, if it's the latter, you can do that inside a university, and that might make a might be a really good way to go. But if you don't want to and you don't think it's right for your family, then don't come. Ball said he was right. Those kids who are one and done, they shouldn't be there with the NCAA trying to hold them hostage, not allowing them to keep the jersey they wear while selling replicas of them in stores. So our guy isn't going to go to Florida State for a year. He's going to come to our league. Ball said that since the Big Baller brand is promoting the league, players will wear the company's products, including Big Baller brand shoes, Big Baller brand uniform, and again, if this is being fully funded by Big Baller brand, well, somebody's buying those. Somebody is going to have to pay for those, and that's where he's really hoping to expand to getting more sponsors. Ball admits that there is a lot of work to do to get the league ready. No venues have been rented yet. Ticket prices haven't been set yet. But he also doesn't have any players signed yet either. The league will not include his sons, LiAngelo and LaMelo, he said, who have signed to play with the Lithuanian club. The logo features, as I said, a silhouette of Ball's son, Lonzo, who plays for the Lakers, going to the hoop for a dunk. He said, we don't need a logo of a guy dribbling, mocking the Jerry West silhouette. Nobody does that anymore. I thought that was one of Lonzo's best skills, was his handles. Later yesterday, Lonzo said that his father has been working on the idea about this league for months, and that if it had existed when the NBA rookie was coming out of high school, he probably would have gone that route instead of UCLA. Personally, probably, is what he said. If you know that you're going to be a draft pick, go ahead and get to play versus the top guys in the country and move on with your life. So clearly you know where I'm going with this. I want to know if you would watch it. Would you watch the junior league, and do you like the idea? And what would it do to college basketball? Might have to add Todd Kowalczyk this. Again, not that a lot of Toledo players are one-and-done guys. Let's be real. But I'm interested what it does to the game. You know, they're going to play North Carolina, which should have one-on-one guys. Duke's going to have one-and-done guys. And all the big monster teams, you know, the monster programs, the legendary iconic programs, have one-and-done guys. And, you know, those one-and-done players are among the best blue-chip prospects in the country every single year. And even if you have them for just a year, it does give you a chance to go into a tournament and make a run. And if these guys would say, well, I can go play one-and-done for you, for free, and have to go to classes, or I can go play one and done in LeVar's league for about $50,000-$60,000 and not have to go to classes, I think LeVar might be onto something here. Like I said, the question is, does he really have the funding for this through only Big Baller brand, or is he going to have to bring in new investors?
I think he's
going to have to partner with other investors.
Oh, yeah, he's going to have to. Just taking his salary idea, $3,000 for the lowest-ranked player, $10,000, you know, for highest rank, put that somewhere in the middle, like $6,000. That comes out to about $500,000 a month in just the player, various player salaries. He's probably going to need another, you know, investors into this, but the more I've been reading about this, the more I think this is actually a pretty decent idea, and I'm a little surprised no one ever really came up with this idea yet. I mean, the one and done rule has been in existence, 2017? It's been in existence for over 10 years now, and everybody hates it. And I'm surprised it took this long for somebody to think of an idea like this.
I agree. It is overdue. It is overdue, and that's why I think it has some potential if it's run for the right reasons. And again, is it being run for the right reasons, or is this just being floated to, again, Big Baller brand? Everybody in sports media and everybody on sports Twitter and sports Facebook and sports Snapchat, et cetera, is talking about LeVar Ball again, talking about Big Baller brand. And the more people talk about Big Baller brand, the more people think, you know what? Christmas is Monday. I do have time to go get order up a pair of Zoe 2s or a pair of Mellow this or that or whatever, because that's what they do. So is it a marketing ploy, or is it a legitimate attempt to solve a very legitimate problem between college basketball and the pros? I want your thoughts.
I think it's both, actually. Honestly, on that last question, I think it's both. I think it starts with LeVar trying to pimp his brand, but he accidentally stumbles on a decent answer.
Yeah, right. Maybe. That very well may be it. But I do want your thoughts at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. We'll take some calls if we can before Todd Kowalczyk comes up next as well after the bottom of the hour Sports Center. But now let's go wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings, Wild Stat of the Day, seems to be more of a series of statistics. A lot was made of Dwayne Wade's move to the bench for the Cavaliers earlier this season. Turns out, though, it was the right decision for the Cavs. Wade on the season is now averaging 11.4 points, 4 assists, and 3.7 rebounds. The assist total is the highest in 2 years, and per 100 possessions, the assist number becomes 8.3, which is his highest since 2010, back when he was younger, spryer, and better. As a team, the Cavaliers are at plus 8.7 with Wade on the floor, and more importantly, the bench itself is a net positive with plus 8.9 with Wade and LeBron on the floor, and plus 8 when LeBron James is on the bench as well. So the Cavaliers' bench had been a net negative in LeBron's first 3 seasons back in Cleveland. So there you go, a series of Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stats of the Day. All right, bottom of the hour, local sports center coming your way. We're going to talk to Todd Kowalczyk next half hour, and we are going to take some calls, hopefully, on LeVar Ball and the idea of this new league as we continue as well right here on The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling along, are we? It is 3:43. What do you think of LeVar Ball now? How do you like me now? Yeah, I don't like LeVar Ball in a lot of ways. I think he's one of the world's biggest promoters, which isn't necessarily a bad thing if it's working for you. But, you know, he's P.T. Barnum in a lot of ways, and I don't think that's always good for the brand, meaning for basketball, for his kids, or for, quite frankly, anybody else. But having said that, everybody can have a good idea sometimes, and I think that this may indeed be a good idea. A junior league that would allow kids to not have to go and play for a year in college pretending to be what they're not, which is a college student, and not ruining college basketball programs with all of these one-and-dones and then having to start it all over again each and every year. So I think there are some really, really positive things happening there with LeVar Ball. What's your thoughts on it? Whenever you get a chance at 866-240-1065, as I remind you, to help yourself deal with the cold weather that is upon us in Northwest Ohio. It's unavoidable. It's going to be here for the next several months, and you're going to wish. I promise you, at some point in January and February, you're going to wish you had a remote car starter from Car Stereo One and that you got a great deal on it, one that allows you to start your car with a smartphone. That way it's nice and warm when you get in. The defroster is on, so your windows are cleared. You're not standing outside chipping ice away from your windshield and windows and mirrors and everything else. And right now, there's a great deal on them. No monthly fee as well. Makes a great Christmas gift at Car Stereo One. You can also warm your backside with someone or the backside of someone special, maybe your own, with a custom installed seat heater. That's just $129 now at Car Stereo One. Bluetooth streaming audio. You know, that's what they're best known for at Car Stereo One. Bluetooth streaming audio and a DVD movie screen from our friends at Pioneer. Not three, not 200, but just 156 in time for Christmas at Car Stereo One. Also get that full car window tinting you've been wanting for just $149. Car Stereo One, the best remote car starters and lowest prices and maybe some of the best Christmas gifts you'll find. If you need directions, log on to carstereo1.com. All right, time to talk a little college basketball now as promised, as head coach of the Rockets, Todd Kowalczyk, joining us for his second of what will be many weekly visits here during this college basketball season. Coach, good to talk to you, sir. How are you?
Doing great, Bob. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. My most important question for you is Coach Kowalczyk done Christmas shopping, or are you crashing the malls over the next 2 or 3 days?
Well, I did take my kids 2 days ago to the mall to get something for my lovely wife. But that's the extent of my Christmas shopping. That's it.
That's just it. I'm assuming Mrs. Claus does the rest of the work?
Absolutely. She's the best. She does an unbelievable job, and she loves Christmas, and she does all the decorating, you know, putting a tree up, taking it down, everything. She does it all.
Well, that's good to hear, and I wish you and yours, if I don't say it again, a very Merry Christmas, Coach. You got a nice present, snapping a 2-game losing streak. That's a nice Christmas present. Put that one in the bag. 83-57 over Jackson State. Give us some analysis.
I think we really defended, you know, and that was a good thing for us. You know, we needed to come out and play a high energy defensively. They were a really good drive team. Not a great shooting team, but a really good driving team. And they're a team that is really good at turning people over. I think they were 10th in the country at steals and creating turnovers. And we had 9 turnovers for the game, which really helps our defense as well. But still not shooting the ball like we were capable of. We had, you know, 2 really good shooters, Trayshawn Fletcher and Marion Jackson go 1-for-6 and 0-for-4 from three, and just haven't had a game yet. We have all of our guys clicking offensively together.
Yeah, and that's something that I'm going to go ahead and assume that you build over the course of a season, and still in the early portion of it, I would call it, the non-conference part of the schedule. But it's just the early part of this. That chemistry is supposed to come as you go. When do you expect that everybody is clicking and you've got all of your shooters on at the same time? Is there kind of an expectation in the course of a season where you say, okay, we should be in that quote mid-season form by now? Does it have to be literally mid-season?
No, I think offensively we're a very skilled team, and we haven't really showed that this year. To be honest with you, I don't think we've consistently shot the ball well from three. Part of it is some guys were in some slumps. Part of it is maybe they were taking bad shots. But can you expect all your guys to be making shots at the same time? I don't think you ever. That'd be awesome. But I don't know if as a coach you can. Lay your head in the pillow thinking that's going to happen every night. That's why you got to, defend and you got to rebound and not turn the ball over and do the little things. But, I do know this, Bob. I like this team. I think it's a team that, maybe the best I've been around as far as every day bringing energy and togetherness and practicing well. And I think when you have teams like that, they tend to get better as the season progresses. And I'm not sure that happened for us last year.
Let's go back to the defense. You talk about how well you defended against Jackson State. 32.8, I think, was the field goal percentage allowed to Jackson State in that game, so that certainly is the defense. That's one thing you can do, unlike shooting. You can't expect all of your best shooters to be on at the same time, but you can sure as heck expect everybody to be on defensively because, right, defense doesn't go into slumps. I've always felt that way. There's no such thing as a slump. Your jumper can be off. You might be a little bit out of rhythm ball handling and turn it over more than you might ordinarily do it, but defense is always on because it's always about effort, is it not?
It is, but it also you're also subject to the talent level and the shooting ability of the other team as well. But there's no question it is about effort. It's about communication. It's about energy and doing the right things and having each other's backs. We have played a very difficult schedule, and we've had the schedule we've played really, really good offensive teams. You look at Marshall and Oakland, and, the one team that we lost to that's not a very good offensive team is Wright State. All the other teams we've lost to are really good offensive teams. And, I think this team, will continue to get better defensively. I think Willie Jackson adds value in that area. He can guard. We're more versatile. We can switch more with him. And we're a better rebounding team with him because our rebounding numbers have not been what we expect right now.
I know we're talking to Rockets coach Todd Kowalczyk for our weekly visit right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. And Jim, I know you've got a question. Hang with me for just one more quick one on this since you brought up the Wright State game. When we spoke last week, of course, it was before that game, and we talked about the clash of styles, one pushing it up and one wanting to be very slow and deliberate and being able to force their own pace on the game. Can you give us a little bit of a summary of how that one got away?
I think what you just said, came true. I mean, they forced, the game to be much slower. We didn't push the ball in transition. It was a low possession game. And I thought more than anything, Bob, we put up a lack of confidence. We missed in the first half alone 8 layups. When I say layups, they weren't uncontested, but they were, within 2 feet of the goal that you have to finish and convert. And I thought that, took some confidence away from us, took some swagger away from us. And as good as Trayshawn Fletcher has been, he played frustrated at that game. And I think that frustration level went through his teammates a little bit. We lost to a team that's really good defensively because we overpenetrated. They pack it in. They have 5 guys inside a 3-point line at all times. Sometimes we tried to force them to the post too much. I don't think we trusted, one dribble, 2 dribble, kick it out for open threes and getting ball reversals. We didn't trust that enough, and we certainly didn't push the pace nearly enough in that game.
Jim Cushman, got a question for Coach. Go ahead.
Love to see the bench effort in this one. Coach, 39-15, you guys outscored Jackson State off the bench. It's always nice to get the kind of production. Sure, some of it might have been, at the very end of the game, but talk to me about the bench's overall effort in this one.
Well, it really wasn't at the end of the game. It was really, to be honest, two guys that really did a great job. Luke Kanapke, what do you have, 16 points? Yeah. And I don't have it in front of me, but on very few shots and only in 20 minutes of action. Unbelievably efficient, and I thought Dylan Alderson did a really good job. And then he had Willie Jackson had 7 points, and he missed 4 free throws, so he could have been a double-figure scorer for us as well. Justin Roberts made it open 3.
5 for 7 for you. Just to follow up on your point there, Kanapke was 5 for 7, so you're in 5 for 6 at the free throw line too.
How many times this year have you seen those types of numbers for him? You know, and I thought Nate Navigato was unbelievably efficient in his shot attempts, and so I think, you know,
he was 5 for 6.
And so I mean, those are efficient numbers, especially on when probably what 4 of those were 3s.
Yes, 4 for 5 from 3. You're correct.
I'm glad you got the stat sheet in front of me because
I pulled it out because I wanted to see it, and it was a double double, obviously, for Nate too, with 16 and 10. But to your point that you were just talking about with the bench, I mean, that is obviously very, very important. You're not always going to get that effective of shooting, but you do need that kind of production, whether it's one or two guys, as it was in this particular case, as you point out, or spread out just a few points more from more different guys.
Well, I think we've settled into a 9-man rotation right now, and it's hard to play 10. It's hard. If you're playing 10, then I just don't think your better players get into the right flow for college basketball. Maybe 10 may be better for the NBA. I mean, you know, Mike Krzyzewski likes to play 7. I mean, nine I think is good. I think 8 is fine. It's 2. You know, I you want to have, you know, Fletcher, Jalen Sanford, Nate Navigato, those guys need to get to 30 minutes, a game. You know, if they're not playing 30, then they're probably not getting enough touches and enough opportunities. You know, but I think the 9-man rotation with Justin Roberts being a backup point guard, Willie Jackson come off the bench right now, Luke Kennett come off the bench, and the guy that's really getting better is Dylan Alderson. He was really, really good. Maybe our best defensive player in last night's game.
Coach, last thing before you run on Saturday, Christmas Eve, you got another chance to put a gift in your own stocking at Cleveland State. Vikings are 3-7, I think. Are they 3-7? They've only played 10. Yeah, you guys have played 11. They played 10. They're off to a bit of a slow start this season. Can you give us a preview?
Talented team athletically. Not a great offensive team, but a team that wants to play fast. They have a really good freshman point guard. You know, Kenny Carpenter is a senior all-league player. You know, they're a good team, you know, but we hope to come out and just continue to play hard and play together and, you know, go home for the holidays. We actually have a little holiday dinner tonight at Manchi Steakhouse for some of our veteran players because we're celebrating. Willie Jackson got a 3.4 GPA. I told him if you get a 3.0, we're going to go to Manchi Steakhouse. We're going there tonight.
That is outstanding. Congratulations to him. That's always great when you see student-athletes really, truly emphasizing the student part. That's awesome. By the way, I graduated with over a 3.4. Can I have some steak? Can I?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go. Let's go.
Coach Todd Kowalczyk, talking Rockets basketball. Nice win after a couple of losses. Hopefully make it 2 in a row before Christmas. And then after the break, it's at Penn, and we'll talk about that next week. Coach, thanks so much for the time. As always, a Merry Christmas to you, your family, your team, and everybody at the Rockets, and we always appreciate your time.
Hey, Merry Christmas to everybody.
Thanks so much, Coach. Coach Todd Kowalczyk. I got to tell you, I've said this through the years, the last couple anyway, that we've talked to Coach on a regular basis. We did this every week last year. And, Kush, this is one of my most fun interviews each week. You know, and we talk to a variety of people. We talk to what you would call our regulars, analysts that we talk to on a regular basis with that we have a good relationship with.
Right, yeah.
And we bring in others that we don't know very well sometimes. This is one of our regular interviews that I really enjoy. He is a very, very fun guy to talk basketball with because he's a deep thinker about it, and he's just very engaging, and I really like the style. I really enjoy that, and I hope the listeners do too.
Absolutely. Well said.
So Coach Kowalczyk and the boys, again, they're at Cleveland State on Saturday for a 2 o'clock game, and we will definitely talk to him next week. Before they get going again.
Yeah, and then they have they're at Penn of the Penn, Ivy League next Friday, and that wraps up out of conference play, all MAC play.
That's
once
right,
we hit January
Buffalo after New Year's.
Yep,
January 2nd, as a matter of fact.
Indeed,
they are at Buffalo to start league play. So, very much looking forward to that. Okay, so here's what we got here coming up in a few. First of all, I'm going to give hockey tickets away. I thought I did so yesterday. Cushland tells me I did not give you the hockey tickets away that I promised you. I think Cushland's a dirty, rotten liar, but if he's got tickets sitting in front of him, then I guess I am just a bit of a fool because I made a mistake. One of two things is true. Either I made an honest mistake or Cushlin is lying through his teeth. So since he says I still have more walleye tickets to give away against Kalamazoo, I'll do that in just a moment. But what I also want to do is set up the next hour of the program. Coming up at about 4:10, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk baseball. Baseball in midwinter is not usually a thing, except for the fact that the winter meetings were the last week or so. And the Indians made a move kind of after the winter meetings. They signed a new first baseman, and we're going to talk a little bit about that with Zach Meisel. He used to be an Indians beat writer. He is now a writer for The Athletic. Moving on up in the world, if you will, but he's got some thoughts on the Indians moves this winter, the loss of Brian Shaw, the loss of Joe Smith, the loss of Carlos Santana, but the acquisition now, as I said, of Alonso's to play first base in place of Santana. And we'll get his thoughts on where they are, as well as, and this wasn't an Athletic production, you know, from The Athletic, but a really interesting piece I read on ESPN.com, what should Major League Baseball Super 7 teams make next? What moves should they make next? Who are the Super 7 teams, according to ESPN? Well, they would be the Astros, the defending champions, the Dodgers, the NL champions. The Indians are one of the Super 7, the Chicago Cubs, the Boston Red Sox, the New York Yankees, and the Washington Nationals. Those are the Super 7. What moves should they make? So that's an ESPN.com article that I liked, and we'll kind of dig into it a little bit with Zach Meisel from The Athletics as we talk about what kind of moves are indeed in the offing for those teams. So that's coming up, and then after Zach Meisel, we'll dive back into the issue of the Junior National Association. Or what is that? What they call it? Junior Basketball Association. Junior Basketball Association is what LeVar Ball wants to build as a solution for superstar high school players who aren't allowed to go to the NBA yet, but who don't want to pretend to be students at one-and-done programs. So is the Junior Basketball Association something that can indeed work? Can they make it work? Can they build it? Can it live? Can it survive? Can it thrive? So we'll talk. I'll talk about that and take your calls as well. All right, but as we go into the top of the hour Sports Center, again, I've got walleye tickets. If you like your walleye frozen on ice rather than on the grill or in the frying pan, go watch them. The walleye and the Kalamazoo Wings on
next Friday, the 29th.
29th, week from tomorrow at Huntington Center for a 7:15 start. Pair of tickets for you if you're caller 6. Boy, I swear this is deja vu, Kush. I could have sworn I said caller 6 yesterday. But if you're telling me it's there, it's there. So we get another pair of them, that's fine. Be caller 6 now at 866-240-1065, and you will go and see the walleye and the wings. And Zach Meisel joins us after that when we come right back on ESPN 106.5.
For the whole game, really, but especially the last three quarters, you just had one team, Dallas, who played with a much higher level of intensity and a much higher level of offensive energy. I mean, it was just too much for us. We could not stand up to their energy and intensity. We didn't bring that to the game, and we got dominated. No resistance whatsoever. Yeah, the ball was in the paint that second quarter all the time. We couldn't contain any of their guard. We didn't play with good offensive energy either. Their defensive pressure flattened us out. To me, it was as simple as one team played a lot harder on the defensive end and with a lot more quickness and energy on the offensive end. And that told the whole story in the game.
I'm very curious about how it's going to function. You know, I think it could be something good. There's a lot of kids that fall that are in between, like being NBA talent, you know, NBA ready talent coming out of college or high school, and at the same time not being quite good enough. So there's obviously the G League, and you know, there's that option. There's overseas. There's that option too. I'm all for creating opportunities for kids to continue playing basketball. I think it could be a good thing depending on how it's run. So I am very curious to see how it all turns out.
Between college, where these guys can go play, and or the G League, where they can play. I don't know if there'll be a place for this. As I said earlier, whether you think it's a good idea or not, I just don't think LeVar Ball can get out of his way enough to be able to oversee this. You would really need some structure and some planning for this thing, and I just think LeVar likes to control too many things himself, but when you start talking about something this intricate, I just don't think that with his personality that he would be able to pull it off.
Drive deep to right center field. Carry, baby, carry! Gone! Home run! Get into the end zone! And the Mariners have a 2-1 lead here at Yankee Stadium.
That one's hit to right. And that one's hit deep. And that baby's gone. Alonso has done it again. Now it is ripped to right field. Adusi's back, and it is gone!
And the season alarms him.
On the same day that Carlos Santana tried on his new Phillies uniform, Indians reached a two-year contract agreement with free agent first baseman Yonder Alonso. The pact is worth $16 million guaranteed and includes an $8 million vesting option for a third season. Last year, between stints with the A's and Mariners, Alonso had a career year. He belted 28 home runs after never having hit more than nine in a single season. He had an 866 OPS, which was powered by an incredible first half. Much of Alonso's success was due to a heightened fly ball rate, which jumped nearly 10% in 2017 when compared to the rest of his career. The Indians will be hoping that that is a sign of more things to come rather than a fluke, and progressive field in Cleveland often plays well for left-handed hitters.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, you got 2 years and $16 million invested into finding out whether or not it was a fluke. What is this guy? Is he the nine home run career guy, or is he the 28 guy now at the age of 30 that the Indians just signed to a two-year contract? Welcome, hour number two underway now at 12 minutes after 4 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. Great conversation last half hour with Coach Todd Kowalczyk on the basketball side of things. I want to stay on the baseball side now. That's why we kind of saved that little piece on Alonso for the end of the montage, because we're going to talk a little bit of winter baseball now and that signing with our good friend Zach Meisel. Is Zach with us on the line there, Jim? I don't see his name, so I wasn't quite certain if we had him. But Zach Meisel used to be the guy we would say he's on the Indians beat for Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Deal. I can't say that anymore. Now we say he used to be on the Indians beat for about, what, 4 or 5 years. Now he actually writes for The Athletic Cleveland, covering the Indians still, but other beats as well. 4 years. Hey, there it is. There's his bio. 4 years covering the Indians for Cleveland.com and on the Tribe beat since 2011. Okay. So 4 years for .com and on the beats for 6 years. Zach Meisel, good to talk to you again, my friend. I understand you're under the weather. Thanks for playing hurt.
Yeah, you know, when you go to the winter meetings and you're in Orlando for about a week and it's 65, 70 degrees during the day, and then you shift back home to Cleveland and there's snow on the ground, I think it wakes your body up a little bit, and I've been reeling ever since.
It wakes it up and shuts it down is what it does to you.
Yeah, really.
That's the difficult thing. Well, I understand that. I do seriously appreciate you coming on, even though you're not feeling the best. We won't keep too long. But let's start. Well, you know what? Before we start with the new first baseman, let's talk about the old. You wrote a piece a few days ago about Carlos Santana once it was confirmed that he was on his way to Philadelphia on a $60 million deal. Certainly not something the Indians were interested in paying. Got to talk about the ramifications of that. What does that mean about Jay Bruce? What does that mean about other expenditures since they decided not to offer him a deal as big as, I think, what did they offer, Zach? 48? Was that the word that prior to the $60 million deal offered by the Phillies, were they in the $48 million range with Santana?
Well, I know they were starting around 3 for $36 as free agency began, and right. Basically it was get back to us when you have something more substantial, because we know you will, and then we'll see if we can match it. And when the Phillies were going to give him $60 million, I don't think there was any competition whatsoever.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I thought I'd read that they started at 36 and then upped that to 48. And then once the 60 came in from Philly at 3 years for 20 mil, as you say, there was no chance of that. So you wrote a piece as the Indians bid farewell to Carlos. They waved goodbye to a franchise cornerstone, certainly a long tenured player. Hard to believe it was all the way back in 2010 that he came over as the hot-hitting prospect from the Dodgers in the Casey Blake deal. We make fun of that all the time, just kind of the passage of time. But you say he's a franchise cornerstone. In terms of longevity, in terms of, you know, they oftentimes say the best ability is availability. He always was playing 150 or more games, was very rarely, if ever, hurt. I get that. But the guy, through 7 years, put some decent numbers up from time to time, never decent enough to be an all-star. So what is the legacy of Carlos Santana's years in Cleveland, as you call him a franchise cornerstone, Zach?
Yeah, and look, I'm not saying he's a perennial all-star. Some people were asking me if I was comparing him to Manny Ramirez and Jim Thome, and no, I'm not doing that. But if you look at what the Indians have been through since Santana joined the organization, it's it's such a change, and there are so many ups and downs, and he has been along for the entire ride and has been the most reliable player on the team. He's going to be in that lineup every single day, and you never had to worry about that. And really, it's a manager's dream. And so, no, he doesn't always have the sexy statistics, and he's not, he's not the most talented guy on the roster ever. But if you look at the last decade of Indians baseball and what's the one constant and who's the one guy you can count on being in that lineup and maybe not having seasons that blow you away, but always having a good season. I mean, you knew what you were getting. He never dipped below those expectations. And so, especially when you consider that they didn't give up anything to get him, it was such a heist to trade Casey Blake for him. And it's crazy to think back now at it happened almost 10 years ago, and that speaks to the longevity he's had, durability he had, and he played for some really lousy teams under Manny Acta, and he's played for some disappointing teams under Terry Francona, and yet he was there through it all. And it's hard, especially in today's game where you have so many little trades and free agency changes everything, and there's so many ways you can manipulate a roster, and yet he survived several roster turnovers, coaching staff turnovers, and that's hard to do. So maybe the word cornerstone is a little strong, but I think people are starting to value and appreciate what he brought to the franchise for almost 10 years.
When you said he might not have had the sexy statistics, you're right, of course. Does that make him moderately disappointing in his career there? Because he did have sexy hitting statistics when he was that prospect with the Dodgers. He was considered to be, in some ways, similar to Matt LaPorta when the CC trade was made, the best hitting prospect in AAA, really in all of minor league baseball. He was kind of in that realm. Obviously, LaPorta fizzled out and never became anything. Carlos Santana had a Hall of Fame career compared to that, but it never lived, you know, that sexiness was there. I think there was an expectation that he would put up a lot bigger numbers at the big league level when they made that deal than what he ended up doing. He ended up being very solid and, as you say, available, consistent manager's dream. You know he can count on him to be there and to do some good things, but he never I feel like it's almost a little bit of a disappointment that he never reached the hitting potential that he showed as a Dodgers prospect.
Yeah, I think part of that, too, was because he came up as, I mean, when he was with the Indians in the minor leagues, he was a catcher. And so if you're daydreaming about a guy who's going to hit 290 with 30 home runs every year, and he's behind the plate, there are very few teams that have that. I mean, Buster Posey and maybe a couple others, and that's it. So I think part of it is the fact that he didn't last at catcher. So you put those numbers that are in your head, you put it at first base, and it's like, okay, well, if you have a first baseman who hits 290 with 30 homers every year, that makes sense. That's good, but a lot of teams have that. But I think, yeah, something changed along the way where he turned into more of a patient hitter and not the kind of guy who, I mean, he seemed like he was going to be the guy who had a 300 average, a 400 on base percentage, and a 500 slugging percentage. And those are so rare that it's easy to get carried away with what your vision is of a player when he's 23 and is in double A. What he turned into, I mean, if you compare him to others around the league, I mean, he's still because he does it year in and year out, he was a really good hitter, and he was very underappreciated. And I know some people want to bat an eye at on-base percentage, but he drew 100 walks every year, which is incredible. And he didn't strike out much either. So I think he just turned into a different type of hitter than maybe what we had expected. And that happens because minor league pitching is much different than major league pitching. And I think also you have to kind of tweak your expectations when depending on the position a guy plays, because you're always going to expect a little less from your catcher position, but there is more value having a really good hitting catcher. So I think things just changed, and maybe it was tough for people to swallow that he was never going to be that player that they envisioned, but I think enough people woke up at some point along the ride and said, okay, he's still a pretty valuable guy, and yeah. It's a good thing we've had him here for the last 10 years.
Yeah, and the last thing on him, and we'll close the book and move on, is you know, that 100-walk thing is wonderful, as you point out. But to me, that's great if you're a leadoff hitter. We need guys on base, and if you walk all the time and you know and have a high on base percentage, that's great as a table setter. But when you're batting in the middle of an order, and he did lead off some, but when you're batting in the middle of the order and you're drawing 100 walks, it's probably because you're a 35 home run bopper, and you're not getting all these great pitches to hit, and you've got a great eye and you're getting on. That's fine. But when you're middle of the order and I think your highest home run total was 23 or 27 or something like that.
Well, he hit 34 last year.
Oh, he had 30. Oh, okay. My apologies. Before that, then, his highest was somewhere in the mid-20s like that. And I don't know, did he ever have 100 RBI a year?
I don't know. I mean, that depends on who's getting on base.
He had 90 a few times. But anyway, my point to that is, you know, when I see those walk totals, if it's accompanied by that 34, 35, and I'm glad you reminded me about that, that's great, but it wasn't always a thing on the way up, and that's one of the things where I always felt just a little bit cheated, a little bit shy of what I think we should have seen from Carlos Santana. But he's a Philly. Let's talk about Yonder Alonso. Is he the guy whose highest home run total was 9, or is he the guy at age 30 who broke out with a 28 home run season with a 501 slugging percentage for two teams, a first-time All-Star? Is this something he can replicate now? You know, into his 30s at the back end of what a guy's prime would traditionally be. What did the Indians just sign?
Yeah, this is a very interesting case study, and it's basically a $16 million investment on a couple of months and hoping that they can extrapolate that out over the next 2 or 3 years. I would say he's closer to the 28 homer guy just because it's a fundamental change in his approach. I mean, he like many others last year, changed his swing, changed his how he wants to attack pitches. And by altering the launch angle, and we can get super scientific here, I mean, it allowed him to produce more fly balls, and more fly balls equals more home runs. Now, the issue is he didn't do it quite to that level, that all-star level in the second half. He had a significant drop-off. So he was still reaching base at a Carlos Santana-like level, but that power wasn't quite there in the second half. And you're right. He did it in 2017, or at least a few months of 2017. He had never done that before. And this was a guy who was hyped up pretty big as a prospect and had a lot of potential and has been with many different organizations now. So you kind of want, I mean, it's impossible to know if it's sustainable. I would certainly trust the Indians have done their homework, and they've talked about how they had talks at the winter meetings last week where one morning they were discussing whether it was Alonso or Logan Morrison, guys who have that same path where they should be a power hitter, it's not quite clicking, and then they made these adjustments last year and it clicked. But is it worth your financial investment to bank on that happening in the future? You never really know. So it's an interesting play. He also doesn't hit lefties very well, and he's not great defensively. So it's definitely a drop-off from Carlos Santana. It's just how much of a drop-off it'll be probably depends on what his launch angle is and how many fly balls he hits next year.
We're talking to Zach Meisel, who covers the Indians and more for The Athletic now out of Cleveland, graduating from Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer, doing an outstanding job. And congrats on that, by the way. I don't know if I ever said that to you before when you switched. How long has it been now? A little less than a year, I want to say?
Like 4 months.
Okay, about half a year then. Okay, so that's awesome. Congrats. Does the decision to not pay Santana open the door for signing Jay Bruce to a long-term contract?
I'd be shocked. I think, and I've racked my brain with this. Honestly, I don't really know what they're doing. Because you have a bunch of pieces where, like, how does Michael Brantley fit in the equation here? Are you putting him back in left field, Jason Kipnis back at second base? Because that kind of goes against what worked last year and what they stood for. And they've said they prefer Jose Ramirez at second base because it really helps their defense. Michael Brantley might not even be ready for opening day. Brandon Guyer might not be ready for opening day. So there's a lot of question marks here. And the Alonso signing, I guess it fills a spot at first base, although I don't know if he's going to play every day because you don't necessarily want him facing left-handed pitchers. So it doesn't really answer a whole lot. And so I think they have holes in the bullpen. They lost Brian Shaw and Joe Smith. They lost Kyle Crockett and Sean Armstrong. They haven't replaced any of those guys. So they still have things to solve, and I don't know that Jay Bruce would do it. I don't know that they want to commit that sort of money over that many years to a guy like that. So it's perplexing there's plenty of guys out there still. There's plenty of time left in the off season, but I have a feeling that they have quite a bit of homework left on their plate.
Yeah, I think you're right. I just, boy, I get it. You make a very compelling argument as to why you'd be shocked, but that's an awful lot of power to give away. You know, from a from an American League Division champion team, to let Santana go and to let Jay Bruce go, and with the question of whether or not you'll ever get the power you used to get from Michael Brantley, and where to play him as well. So that's an awful. I really thought that might be something they would look at now is making a deal for him. But you're right. They have to deal with the other moves too. The loss of Joe Smith, the loss of Brian Shaw. Any idea how those things are solved?
I think just by veteran relievers who are out there, they'll pick up the scraps at some point in January, most likely. The bigger question is, you know, Cody Allen and Andrew Miller are entering their contract years. So how are you going to fix the bullpen beyond 2018 is a good question, because I don't know that they're in a position where they can afford to give Andrew Miller a three-year, $48 million deal after next season, or Cody Allen something similar. So they've got some questions and a lot to think about and weigh in terms of how they can extend this window past 2018. I know everyone's asking about Manny Machado, and if you wanted to...
You stole my next question.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to trade for him, you probably could, but you would pretty much be saying it's 2018, and then I don't know how you would fill all the holes you would have, because you'd have to give up some young pitching. So they're in a tough spot, and I back to the Bruce thing for a second. The one thing that kind of doesn't fit in with what I think everyone expected the plan to be is picking up Michael Brantley's option, especially knowing he was going to have ankle surgery and could very well miss opening day. Jay Bruce essentially replaced Michael Brantley in the lineup last year. So if you lose Jay Bruce, you're not necessarily losing a piece because you get Brantley back. But with Brantley's status uncertain as it is every year,
right,
you are losing something. So they're banking on Brantley basically replacing Bruce, who was replacing Brantley. And that's as risky of a move as you can do, and that's not even mentioning the fact that it cost them $12 million to do it, which then prevents them from making other moves.
I was totally shocked when they went ahead and renewed him. I did not think they would pick up that option because of what you just said. And that's what I said a few minutes ago. I mean, that's guaranteed power loss with Santana and Bruce in the hopes that you get Michael Brantley's power back, and I don't know that he'll ever be the power hitter he was again with all of the different myriad of injuries that he has dealt with. So I agree with you. That's a very, very perplexing thing to me, and it might limit them. You don't think they would do a one-year, though, deal, you know, trade and you know, for a Manny Machado for 1 year at about $20 million? Do they not have enough pitching where it wouldn't kill them beyond 2018 to bring him in for a year?
They could. Like, if you could do it for Danny Salazar and maybe a second-tier prospect, yeah, I think that's something to certainly consider. But, will Dolan sign off on paying for that? I don't know. And two, if the Orioles want more, because they've expressed publicly that they're not happy with the offers they've received, I don't know if it's worth giving up Francisco Mejia or Tristan McKenzie or someone like that, because those are the guys that are going to either help you immediately in 2018, 19, 20, or you can use at the deadline or a year from now as a trade chip to bring in someone who's going to play for you for more than just a year. With Manny Machado, I mean, that's, you're basically saying it's 2018, and after that, it's who knows.
Zach Meisel covering the Indians and more for The Athletic. Last thing, Zach, I'm going to let you run and rest that voice of yours. The Yankees, what they're doing here is amazing, and of course the belief is they're not done with pairing Stanton and Judge and Sanchez in that lineup, that Manny Machado could very well be, whether it's by a trade or in free agency after next year, put together a Golden State Warriors-type version of a baseball lineup. And then, of course, there's been, for the last several years, the belief that Bryce Harper, when he's a free agent, could end up there playing havoc with that short porch from the left side. Where does it end? How much is too much? Do you see either one of those two guys, Machado and Harper, or Harper being a part of that, either, you know, via trade this year with Machado, or when free agency happens after 2018?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, boy, did they do this in a hurry. And they had some help from the Marlins, and Giancarlo Stanton by not going to San Francisco or St. Louis kind of almost threw a wrench in the Indians' plans indirectly. So it's, they still have pitching questions. They have a great deep bullpen. They have a great deep lineup. But keep in mind, CC Sabathia outdueled Corey Kluber twice in a five-game series, which is incredible to say, and that's the reason the Indians watched the Astros win the World Series, as opposed to being able to do something about it themselves. So there are still questions, and it's not that they're not an invincible almighty Yankees team yet, but you're right, because they're being kind of cautious and making sure. I mean, they just gave away Chase Headley to the Padres. I don't know why the Padres helped them out, but that saved them some money. And so they're setting the table to where they could have some freakish murderer's row. But I'm thinking that 2019 is probably the year they become a behemoth and everyone predicts them to win five consecutive World Series. I think the doors still open a little bit in 2018 just because they have questions about their pitching and they still have some youth. I mean, these are guys who they got their first taste of the playoffs last year, but it's not like Gary Sanchez doesn't have faults behind the plate. And it's not like, you know, Gleyber Torres, who might be their second baseman, coming up, is going to be a rookie. So they have questions, but those questions become less significant probably a year from now, and that's when they'll go from being scary to absolutely terrifying.
Zach Meisel told me before we came on today that he has about 65% effectiveness in his voice due to the sickness that he got from coming back from sunny Florida to frozen northeast Ohio where he is. And, Zach, he gave us seven solid innings here, I'd say. Maybe even seven and a third. We had to send to the pen one batter into the eighth. Really, really great performance, my friend. Thanks for pitching hurt.
I appreciate it. I can't wait to go meet up with my best friend, NyQuil.
Well, listen, you enjoy the pass out that's going to result from that, and then enjoy your Christmas. Merry Christmas to you and happy holidays, and we look forward to catching you up again when we get into real hot stove time.
Same to you, Bob. Thanks.
Thank you, Zach. God bless. Zach Meisel, one of the best in the business writing for The Athletic. Seriously, that was a solid seven-plus innings I think we got out of him for a guy who didn't...
Quality start, man. Quality start.
It was indeed. He wasn't sure he could take the hill at all at 65%, and he came out and gave us a good seven-plus innings, I would say. Okay, it's 4:34. Hey, did we give away a pair of hockey tickets this time? Are you sure? You're positive? Matt Schock of Toledo won walleye tickets that I hope we didn't give to two different people, because somehow, some way, in my weird, warped, ADHD-addled mind, I still swear I had deja vu that we gave those away yesterday. But if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Congratulations to Matt Schock of Toledo for going to the winning the walleye tickets. He'll be going to walleye in Kalamazoo. You got any more, Kush?
We have one more pair.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. I have one right here.
I'll tell you what, if we give away two pairs of tickets to three people, then you're buying somebody tickets.
That's fine. I'll take that. I'm pretty confident in where I'm at, so I'll take that in if it has to happen.
All right. Yeah, you would know. You've got the prize sheet there. Jim says we got one more pair for the walleye and the Kalamazoo Wings for 7:15 puck drop. On the 29th, a week from tomorrow, Friday the 29th at Huntington Center. You want them? What did we do last time? Caller 6?
Yeah, we did 6.
Let's extend it out a little bit. Let's go caller 9 this time. Caller number 9, 866-240-1065. You can go to the hockey game. And then also save that number because we want you to dial after the bottom of the hour local sports center and talk to us about the Junior Basketball Association. Can LeVar Ball's League work? Do you like the idea? If you had a young stud five-star prospect who's going to end up in the NBA in a year at graduating from high school, would you want him to go and play for Ohio State for a year, Kentucky for a year, Duke for a year, or go to the league that LeVar is creating to play against other elite nationally ranked prospects and get paid $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 for that 1 year rather than going to college and pretending that you're interested in a degree? That's the question we want to talk about on the other side as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5.
Right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling onward, are we? It's 4:44. I've only got about 16 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you before we go drive time in right here on the ticket. Oh, by the way, congratulations to Anthony Mercy. Is that an L? Miracle?
Mercile.
Yeah, you've spelled it Maricel. M-E-R-I-C-L-E. He knows who he is. Even if you can't spell it right, Anthony of Maumee won the last pair of walleye tickets that Jim Quishlin very well may be coming up out of his pocket to buy. Okay, teasing, of course. 866-240-1065. Do you think the LeVar Balls Junior Basketball Association can work? Do you like the idea? Do you want to see it work? I find myself, for the first time maybe, since he burst onto the public scene, in LeVar Ball's corner here.
I'm curious about how it's going to function. You know, I think it could be something good. There's a lot of kids that fall that are in between, like being NBA talent, you know, NBA-ready talent coming out of college or high school, and at the same time, not being quite good enough. So there's obviously the G League, and, you know, there's that option that's overseas. There's that option, too. I'm all for creating opportunities for kids to continue playing basketball. I think it could be a good thing, depending on how it's run. So I am very curious to see how it all turns out.
Between that was Carlos Boozer, yes? Jim?
That was indeed Carlos Boozer, the one-time Cav.
I don't know that either he or I quite understands this accurately, because I don't think we both can. He's talking about tweeners, it sounded like. He's talking about tweeners. Guys that, you know, might be good enough for the NBA, but not quite good enough.
Okay.
It's just a place for them to play.
Yeah.
I don't see this as that. Because if you're not quite good enough to play in the NBA,
yeah,
then you go to college.
Darn right. You better for your own sake.
That free education.
Yeah.
And you don't do one and done. You play 3 or 4 years, and if you get an NBA opportunity at the end of that, great. If you don't, you've got your degree.
Exactly.
That's not what this league is for,
no.
In my understanding. One of us doesn't get it, either Carlos or I. My understanding, and this is just for the kids, it's basically a one-year deal or a 1 6-month deal, however long this season would be for this team with this league with 10 teams, for just nationally ranked prospects coming out of high school who maybe can't get into college. Maybe they don't have the grades. They're just great basketball players, can't get into college, so they have to bide their time before they can go to the NBA, or guys who could go into college but who don't have any interest at all in actually getting a degree. They're just there to hold off that 1 year before they're allowed to enter the NBA draft, and they don't want to be a one-and-done pretending to be a student.
Right.
Taking a music appreciation. And I was trying to remember Andy Katzenmoyer's course load, because that was one of the most famous ones.
My favorite one is going to college football. Remember when Matt Leinart stayed at USC one more year and his class was ballroom dancing?
That's
always the symbol to me of this whole thing.
But that's the kind of thing that one-and-doners do.
Right.
And it's just a joke. And so this league would just be, rather than going to play one season for a big-time college program and coach, not really getting anything out of the educational part of this, but you just have to bide your time. Rather than doing that and not getting paid, play the LeVar's League. Get paid, you know, $10,000 a year if you're the number one guy on the team, the top-rated prospect on each of the 10 teams, all the way down to $3,000 a month for the guy that's the lowest-rated prospect on each of the teams. There's probably only going to be a roster of 8 or 10 players each team. And you know, so you make yourself $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 for this league, and then go into the NBA draft.
That's the way I've been seeing it, too.
Carlos explained it very differently, like this is for tweeners, and I don't quite think it's that way.
I think people are still trying to figure out exactly, you know, what this is, but yeah, I'm under the impression this is, you're a big-time prospect. You don't want to
get into the league yet. You're not allowed.
And you can't get into the G League either, because it's controlled by the NBA. Or at least I would think. You know, you're not able to sign a contract, because that would be the same. So your only options are go to some college for a one-and-done or go overseas. Well, those are literally your only two options.
This is instead of going overseas, you can play here in what would be called the Junior Basketball Association with the Lonzo Ball logo.
College where these guys can go play, and or the G League where they can play. I don't know if there'll be a place for this. As I said earlier, whether you think it's a good idea or not, I just don't think LeVar Ball can get out of his way enough to be able to oversee this. You would really need some structure and some planning for this thing, and I just think LeVar likes to control too many things.
Ah,
Didn't mean to cut him off there.
LeVar likes to control too many things himself, but when you start talking about something this intricate, I just don't think that with his personality that he would be able to pull it off.
Golic makes a very good point about LeVar running it. I don't think he could run it because he doesn't get out of his own way, but it's a great idea. I think it has the potential to be a great idea as long as he's willing to let someone else run it. Just, you know, bankroll it as much as Big Baller Brand is able to. Pool those resources with other investors who want to be a part of this. And if you can, I mean, Jim, if Kevin Durant was coming out of high school right now, if LeBron James was coming out of high school, now LeBron was one of the last ones, obviously, to be able to go to the NBA straight out of high school before they changed the rule, where you're not allowed to. Do you think that people would be willing to pay to come and watch LeBron James play in these games at this developmental league rather than be forced to go to a Ohio State for 1 year? I promise you they would.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, big time college basketball recruiting, especially because of, you know, the YouTube factor, the Twitter factor, the Instagram factor. I mean, these guys are as well. There are high school players. There are high school sophomores not named LaMelo. There are high school sophomores right now that are in basketball circles, household names.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're that good and they put on shows during AAU and Summer League and so on and so forth. If these kids aren't going to college and they're just waiting for their chance to go to the NBA and they all decided, hey, we're going to join this team in this junior basketball association for a year only, each year that league would be replenished and refreshed with the next batch of nationally ranked up-and-coming stars.
Yeah.
I think people would watch, and I think people would pay a little bit, not talking about NBA prices, of course.
Sure, yeah, you can't.
Enough to justify the $3,000 to $5,000 a month or whatever that these guys would get before they go to their NBA draft after 1 year in the what would be called the JBA.
Yeah, and it could certainly play out that way, you know, if it goes down. And in terms of LeVar Ball himself, since he's the one proposing this in theory, you know, he might be in a little over his head. He's going to need, as we mentioned in the first hour when we were talking about this, I think he's going to need some other investor groups. You know, I just did some spitball of numbers, and you're to pay all the salaries by the logic he wants to monthly, you're going to need about half a mil monthly.
That's,
just
that's 10 teams at 10 players per team.
Yeah, 10 players, because it's at about 80 players for 10 teams, and you gave the structure 3 to 10.
Oh, you said 80 players. Okay, so it would be 8 players per team.
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
But either way, you know, take 80 players, and they won't all make 3, but they won't all make 10, so I put it at around 6, and it spit out about 480,000, yeah. So I'll just round that up. So you're going to need that to be able to pay for it, so you're going to need some other investors. And quite frankly,
and there very well may be. There very well may be. There are some people who are interested in developing young amateur players that are celebrities that might be willing to partner with him. Jim, let me get a couple of quick calls.
Sure, go ahead.
Top. Jim and Mommy on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim, go ahead. What do you think? Could this work? Do you like the idea?
Well, I had 2 points, and I'll get to my first one after I was going my second one. The second one has to do with this Ball guy. I think that between the AAU things in the high school teams, the college, if they stay a couple of years, they get more developed because the NBA does say some of these guys are coming out way too early and they're not ready. If they want to stay there 2 or 3 years and then go on, if they don't make it, they always have the developmental league. But as far as Mr. Ball goes, now I may be wrong, but I think he should just go to the Azores Island in the middle of the Atlantic and wait for his tweeners to come. It's a fueling point. So, and the second part, and the second, Bob, I just wanted to tell you for the holiday, I think I listen to a lot of talk radio, and you are very good. You keep it honest. You keep it simple. You keep the sports. You do a wonderful job, and I hope Toledo hangs on to you for a long time because you're what's lacking. I mean, it's a lot of the programs are lacking what you give every day, and I really appreciate it.
Well, listen, that's very kind.
And I want you to have a nice Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and all that good stuff. And like I said, I think Mr. Ball just needs to go and wait in the Azores. It's a fueling point. He'll get his tweeners coming in and out. So.
Yeah, that's very well said. Hey, Jim, thank you, and thank you for the compliments.
Yep.
I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Bob.
Jim Cushman, do me a favor. Get that man's address. I owe him a Christmas card.
All right.
With a check in it. Eric in Toledo, you're next. Eric, go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I think you guys bring up some really good points. You know, this is for those kids that they may not be 100% ready for the league, but it kind of gives them an opportunity to play against top league prospects for kids that normally would be one and done. And I also think you're right that LeVar Ball would be the guy that holds it back at the same time as getting it started. Because when it comes to stuff like this, investors are going to look at sustainability. How do we keep this thing going beyond 1, 2, 3 years? We need this to be a 5, 6, 7, 8 year investment at the very least. How do we sustain attendance? How do we keep these kids interested? How do we compete against the colleges that are recruiting these kids and offering them, you know, all the stuff that comes with the college?
Because that's a very good point. And, Jim, you didn't factor this in when you talked about player salaries, you know, the modest salaries that mm-hmm. Pay these kids for a month. What's going to draw them, Eric, tell me if you agree with this, what's going to draw them is what kind of coaches are you going to get? You're going to have to pay well-established, big-name, well, moderately bad. I'm not saying you're going to get Coach K to do this, but you know, if a kid is being advised by somebody about his NBA prospects long term, and the kid is told you can go play for Mike Krzyzewski, or you can go play for John Calipari for a year, or you can go play for Joe Simpson, nobody's ever heard of, who's coaching one of the LeVar League teams, they're probably going to be, you know, going to be drawn to the school, even if it means going to classes to play for one of those guys who might get them ready for the NBA faster than a nobody would. They're going to have to pull some decent name coaches in to compete, as you say, against the schools that are willing to do the one and dones for these blue chip prospects. Would you agree, Eric?
Yeah, I think 100% right. The coaches have to be right because coaches develop players. Players can go and work on their own stuff at their own time. But a coach is a guy that literally, I'm a coach myself. I coach basketball. Mm-hmm. I watch these kids. I coach now sophomores at the CYO League. I coach those kids from seventh grade to now sophomores. And their development from when they were seventh graders to now where they're sophomores and they're driving cars, which freaks me out a little bit, is massive. These kids were smaller than me, and now they're taller than me, and they're bigger, and they're faster, and their game has gotten better because they've had not only good coaches, but good influences in their lives to continue on that good athletic path. And that's what those kids need when they're coming out of high school. Someone that's going to develop them.
Eric, that's a great call. That's a great point you make, and I thank you much. That might be more than anything else. I appreciate it. That might be more than anything else, Jim, the key to this league being founded, getting started, and having any sustainability. More than the investors, more than the amount of money to the guys, but do the guys see their path to the NBA running through this league? Mm. And that would mean a year of development under a very good,
yes,
the tutelage of a very good young coach.
That's true. I was just throwing out minimum numbers. I didn't even think about coaches and stuff yet.
I know. I didn't either until just now as Eric and I were talking. And I think because he talked about competing for these guys.
Yeah.
And you know, the colleges are going to say, no, don't go play for them. Sure, you might make $40,000 to $50,000 for a few months' work, but they're not going to get you ready to make millions at the NBA level the way we can here if you come and even just play 1 year at our school. And so the recruiting battle would be another element here that would have to be impacted by whatever coaches they have for this league. But I love the idea in theory, in principle, if not in practice. I like the idea. All right, that is all the time that we got. We got to get out of the way because I've said it before and I'll say it again. Mike Miller will not be denied nor delayed. Drive Time is coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow for Free for All Friday.